Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Inclusion First Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Carrie Sawyer, and I am so happy that you are here with us today and listening to this episode with us. So we have a really incredible guest, someone who is very connected here into the San Diego startup and entrepreneur scene. He's doing really amazing things at the Jacobs Center, and I cannot wait to introduce you to him. My friend Alex Waters is the Director of Economic Development at the Jacobs Center for Neighborhood Innovation. Alex is responsible for providing diverse entrepreneurs with support and access to resources that help grow businesses and jobs in the San Diego region. The mission of his program is to create a vibrant, self-sustaining ecosystem that results in more and better job opportunities for low to moderate income and diverse communities. Alex has done a ton of things, and he has taught business and leadership at the University of San Diego. He's served as a lean innovation coach. He's helped early leaders and business owners to level up as a coach at Seth Godin's Alt MBA. Alex is a trusted resource for developing concepts into programming that impacts the city and business ecosystems. Prior to serving in his current role, he had an integrated role with the Downtown San Diego Partnership, helping create new opportunities, programming, and opportunities for early stage entrepreneurs. Alex is fantastic. We're going to have a really great conversation today. Please join me in welcoming Alex Waters to the Inclusion First Podcast. Alex Waters, thank you so much for being on the Inclusion First Podcast. We are so excited to have this conversation with you today. Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So how about we start off by you just doing a little mini introduction, letting us know who you are, what you do, and why this work is so important that we're out here doing.
Yeah. So my name is Alex Waters. I'm Director of Economic Development for the Jacobs Center for Neighborhood Innovation. And one of the primary things that I do is run Connect All at the Jacobs Center, which is the business accelerator program funded through the City of San Diego and the Department of Housing and Urban Development. It's really providing opportunities for folks to actually sort of grow and start their businesses. And a little bit of, I guess, about myself, I East Coast transplant, grew up Maryland, came out here for grad school, loved the sunshine, went back to DC, cut my teeth and sort of ed tech, worked in sort of a high growth ed tech startup, decided I really didn't like the winters, decided to move back to San Diego, and then really got involved in sort of the startup community.
And here you are.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. So the way I like to start this out is just really to think about the idea of activism. And so the first question that I have for you is, in today, in 2021, what does it look like to be an activist? And do you consider yourself to be one?
That's a great question. I think, like a lot of people, activism comes in a lot of different sort of forms and types and styles. My traditional sort of view of activism is very much along the lines of sort of grassroots community organizing. Mm-hmm. Basically, as they say, sort of taking it to the streets, being there day in and day out to create impact and change. I think what we see now a little bit, though, is that there's always been different opportunities, different ways for people to be active and to, you know, sort of push for change. And so there's a lot of different avenues, especially when you start thinking about like social media and organizations that are sort of in the online space. I would feel hard pressed to call myself an activist with like a capital A, if you will. But I do like to think of myself as an individual that cares deeply about making sure that just and right things happen and occur. And so I try to push all of my energy into making sure that whatever I'm involved in, whether it's organization, systems, volunteer efforts, whatever that is, that it's a part of something that is aiming to be more inclusive and more open for folks to participate.
Yeah, I love that. And what you said, activism, you don't consider yourself an activist with a capital A, but maybe like a lowercase a or like a medium A. I think we have this grandiose idea, like you said, of this is activism. But there are so many different ways to create that change around you. And honestly, like we can't say that a small thing that I do doesn't have a big ripple compared to a big thing, right? We have no idea where those things go. And I think the most important thing to me is that we all do something, that whether it's big or small, that we find our place and that we fill it, that we fill it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
With everything that went down in 2020 with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, like the attack on Asian elders, like all of these things, how has that changed like the work that you do and the things that you talk about, especially in the context of like anti-racism and how that plays out in creating these safe spaces for founders and for entrepreneurial minded and startup people to come who are of color to come and like get their stuff out in the world. How has this changed the landscape for you?
So I think there's maybe two separate kind of avenues of that, right? Like how has it changed during the day-to-day work, and then just the kind of collective consciousness, if you will. And I think a lot of people, 2020, a lot of things happened and occurred to where folks really had to take a step back and a real pause on what do they think about themselves, institutions, how they're working, who they're collaborating with. In a really serious way that I don't know for most folks who I would say are my age have had that same similar kind of experience previously. So there's that one piece. With respect to sort of what we do on an everyday basis, it's I think help amplify the need for opportunities for individuals that don't always get them, right? And it's not because of lack of hard work. It's not because lack of ingenuity. People can say there's a lot that you can learn about someone based on or determining factors based on their zip code, right? And it's like that shouldn't really be, right? Like it should be that everyone has an equal opportunity to do all kinds of things. Now, it has helped in some sense because now you're seeing some responses from whether it's larger corporate entities or just people who say, look, I might not have ever given back before. I might not have ever mentored before. I might not have ever helped before, but I want to do something. And so you have had a lot of attention for us, I think, in a really positive light, but also sort of making sure that, we keep spaces open and available for folks to just be honest and open and talk about them. I mean, just to give one, we have a one segment of our program we've built in even more now is on entrepreneurial mindset. And Dr. Debbie Jen comes in and talks about it, but like, the benefits of what it actually is to be sort of a diverse founder, and how that's a benefit. And you have to look at it and make sure that you sort of view it in that way, but also understanding some of the challenges that come along with that. But being able to have that kind of open dialogue inside of a space that could very easily turn into, well, it's just about business when we know that it's much more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Has it changed the kind of founders that you have coming through the cohort?
No, I mean, so our program primarily is focused on at least from the very beginning, low to moderate income and diverse founders. So from the very start, like we have been in the space of making sure that we have inclusive environments. So I don't think that that's changed much at all in terms of the individuals who have actually come through the program or wanting to be a part of the program. I think what it has done for a lot of folks though is anytime there's a massive shift. And anytime people may say, oh, well, this area wasn't inclusive anymore, and now it is, people in general are skeptical. And so I think what that does is it puts more sort of onus on organizations to be like, no, the proof is really here that we really do create this sort of quality environment, that we really are aiming to, amplify voices and making sure that everyone feels included and feels like they're in a safe space to be able to be the best version of themselves possible. Because it's easy to put it down. It's very hard to live out.
Yeah. I would love for you to say more about this, and I kind of think of it as an old school tension, but the tension between like this is business and, talking about these things, anti-racism, environment, culture, that's something else that doesn't matter as much. Tell me more about where that comes from and how you see that shifting in today's environment.
I think it's always been sort of an underlying part of it, right? Like we're human first, right? Like we're people. Like we have our backgrounds, our cultures, our families. And in existing, just in general, like that comes before any vocation, any job, any career, any aspiration that you have to sort of build, a successful business. What I think has happened now, though, is that a lot of people just feel more comfortable speaking the truth of how other individuals make them feel. And that is a big sort of shift, and I think is a change across places where the person may have felt like that before, but now there is an opportunity and they say, look, I'm not actually gonna be here and be the only person that, looks like me, the only person that has my background, the only person that's from where I'm from, to be in a place where other folks don't look like me and say, well, it's okay that no one else here looks like me. It's like, no, actually, it's probably a problem. If you go somewhere and no one else sort of looks like you.
Absolutely. And I feel like I felt that back last summer, this like kind of filter like broke. And all of the wasn't that we were silenced, but the silence that we held, our tongues that we held, like the stuff we put up with, it was just like, no. And there wasn't like a gradual, like, oh, I'm gonna be a little not. It was just like, no, we're not like I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not saying that anymore. Like, if we're going to talk about what's happening, we can't not talk about what's happening. We're going to dance around it. We're going to talk about racism. We're going to say the R word. People never said racism at all in any corporate, in any organizational spaces. We wouldn't even say the word. And now it's something that we're talking about. Even if people aren't doing it well, they don't know how it makes people uncomfortable. It's happening like 3 million percent more than it was. And it's still not happening enough. But it's something. And so this idea that we can come forward and be honest and authentic, and I mean, it's kind of really sad that we weren't able to do that before because that wasn't something that was accepted in the spaces that we were in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of goes back to sort of the idea that you were talking about before about like activism, right? And like a lot of times, and I've been in startup environments, corporate environments, like you think of like the activist part of it is saying, no, we need to make sure that there is a group here that focuses exclusively on inclusion, right? And like people being very adamant about that. But in a sense, like the ability to sort of be muted and have what you were thinking or what you were feeling kind of disregarded, like leads to people not actually taking up that sort of mantle of wanting that to be there because they may not necessarily trust that it is going to be true and genuine and authentic. It's like, oh, well, you might just be really trying to check a box on this thing. And it's not because you really sort of care deeply about how I feel about this or why I feel like, like I said, I'm not able to bring sort of my best self forward in an environment. And I think with everything that happened, I say this a lot to folks that it isn't very often that individuals outside of, some catastrophic situations and like war and things like that you have people actually confronting their own sort of mortality in a very existential way all at the exact same time. And I think what that's done is that's removed the sort of the facade of people having the truth about things. It's like, oh, that's how that worked. And you look and you see that systems are challenged and they're broken and they need to be, redesigned. Okay, I won't go into too much of a tangent.
No, it's okay.
Like, there are sometimes when like systems, like it's not so much the system is broken, the system is designed to do exactly what it does. So the redesign is not to fix a broken system, it's to actually create one that is going to be positive and include everyone's sort of well-being as it continues sort of to move forward.
Yeah, I think that's something that, as we're number one, just talking about racism, but peeling back the layers, like racism is something that's designed intentionally. And so this idea that it's like accidentally happening, in some cases, sure, but in most cases, and all the systemic cases, like maybe they didn't set out to be racist on purpose, but racism is an outcome of how that system was designed. People saw that and they decided that that was an okay flaw or acceptable or not something that they were going to worry about. So it's like an intentional thing. And I love what you said. It isn't always about fixing a broken system. It's about redesigning the system completely to not have these, what I like to call racist outcomes. And there's lots of ist outcomes, sexist outcomes, homophobic outcomes. Anytime you're seeing a group having a negative experience in a system, that is an ist outcome. And that's because of the design of that system. And so how do you take a microscope to that system and look to see what's causing it and then fix it? And to me and a lot of other people, that seems pretty straightforward to do, right? You just do it. But in the bowels and the vortex of corporate and organizational, I don't know, it's something that is more complicated to the point where they can't, it's not that clear for them to do. And I don't understand why.
Yeah, I push back a little bit on that individuals don't understand what to do. I think that in a lot of cases we're talking about individuals and companies and orgs and that are, you know, considered to be some of the brightest minds on the planet. And I don't think that it isn't necessarily that they don't understand it, because there are other parts of their life where they might feel marginalized or they may feel like they're not included. So it's a very human emotion you can tap into. The question is, I think, a value. Like, do you actually value having to potentially give up something for someone else to be in a better position, to feel more authentic and genuine about themselves? And it doesn't, like, I'll give a sort of an example. So when I worked at EdTech company, right, we it was a tech startup. You do happy hours, you do all these different kinds of things. And we had a person on our team who's very religious. And so not that they had a problem with anybody drinking around, but they couldn't participate in the thing that we were doing that everyone did every Friday. Right. And then it dawned on us, it was like, wait a minute, like maybe we should have like a happy hour with like desserts or something simple that like then allows for the person to sort of be participating in it. Right. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like I couldn't understand that this person was sort of excluded. Like I got it. I understood. But then what value was it for me sort of in that capacity as sort of a manager and director to make sure that people feel that they are included and that you're taking their thoughts into consideration when you're designing things that are supposed to be fun for everybody. Right. Like, how's this supposed to be fun for everybody if this one person literally who's a, you know, quality team member doesn't enjoy it and can't participate in it?
And that's like a simple example that like translates to so many other really, really serious systems and serious examples of exclusion. And I was talking about this earlier today, this idea of really like life being like a zero sum game. And I don't believe that, but that is how we're socialized, that if I get more, you get less. If you get less, I get more. But what if we both get more? And because of the more that we both get, everyone gets even more. Like, why do we have to think about it like this give and take versus like, if it's better for you, it's better for me too.
Yeah, I love that frame of, you know, what if it actually is better to not sort of be, you know, in this case, sort of exclusionary? Or what if it is better if two people can enjoy, having more than one person having everything and someone else not having anything, right? Because I do think I think it goes back to what you talked about before with like systems, right? Like systems are structured and they're set in place to have people believe that, well, if I give up something, then that means that I am going to be lesser than what I was previously. And I agree. Like, I don't agree with that at all. You know, I think there's a richness in a lot of cases, just connecting or creating spaces for individuals to really be themselves that you actually can't quantify with like a dollar amount or a title or these other kinds of things that people often, don't seem like that they're willing to budge on or shift or change or adjust, that comes back, I think, tenfold when you actually do that and you actually listen to somebody and hear them and you can say, hey, you know what? We want to make sure that you are a part of the things that we're doing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's another when we're in business, we put on these blinders and pretend that only certain things matter. When we know, like to your earlier point, we're all people and we're people first and we're whole people all the time. Even if I have to show up at your work and pretend that I'm not a whole person, I still am. It's still impacting me. It's still, increasing, decreasing my productivity, what's happening in my whole people life. But yet we pretend as leaders, as organizations that we're not. And I think that's another thing that has flipped with the pandemic is that I'm in your life right now. I can see into the room that you're in. My partner's like getting water, like the dog is barking, the baby, like all of these things are happening. And this veil that we had held so firmly between life and work, it's not there. It never was there, but now it's really not there.
Yeah. It's funny. I talked to somebody about this the other day, and it was about how I'm not a huge person on social media. I find it fine, but I don't use it too often. And I was surprised by how many people didn't want to have their cameras on during meetings when the pandemic first sort of hit and shut things down. And they were like, well, I really don't, I'd rather be on the phone or sort of in person. And I thought to myself, I was like, well, wait a minute. Like we share all of these different kinds of things about our families, our lives. And then you start to think kind of to your point of like a lot of that is very curated, right? Like mm-hmm. You can't curate the dog barking. You can't curate when someone who has kids that come home because the kid doesn't care about your meeting and is going to jump on your or a dog or a cat or something. It's like, so there's these interesting kinds of things that I think that which I think is for the better that we're taking the time to really be more sort of genuine with one another. Because it is true. It's like, okay, well, you can see into somebody's house. I can see if somebody's in their kitchen or if they're outside or, we've all had those moments where it's like, oh man, this is not the best setup for me to be able to do something, but we're just going to have to roll with the punches, right? And I think that's a really great thing because I think it opens the door for honesty when you are talking about things like racism, like sexism, like homophobia, right? Because you have to be honest about it before you can actually have a legitimate conversation about it. You can't be sort of behind the veil or a facade and then think that you're going to make any progress in having those conversations.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The idea of honesty and the idea that that these cameras have brought that an unexpected benefit. But then there's the other side of inclusion in a virtual world and people wanting their cameras off because I'm in the bathroom because I don't have other rooms where someone is not going to interrupt or I'm in bed or wherever, whatever you're seeing behind me, like I'm making judgments on you, you're making judgments on me, and how these new biases play into how we're interacting in this virtual setting, which I think is completely fascinating and something you just never would have thought about, until you're actually in it like, oh, wow, yeah.
I still struggle a little bit with that because I've always been one to be like, if you're sitting someplace and behind you is, not tidy or whatever, like that's not a big deal. Like I'm not going to, at least me personally, I'm not going to make a value judgment on you because the background isn't immaculate or something, right? Because like, that's just, that's life. Like life is just, and we're especially, maybe if it would have occurred and happened that people would have different dispositions, if it was just a sort of shift and move and it just kind of happened. But the fact that literally people were dealing with some very serious kinds of things, whether it was health of themselves, their families being displaced, losing jobs, I think the level of things, and this thing goes back to the point of people speaking up more, like what is actually important and what's serious has sort of taken the forefront because things are serious and you can't sort of go back into it when you have to literally change all of your behaviors in your world. And some people obviously are impacted much more than others. But I think that's a really big sort of point that comes up in thinking about it. with respect to like how people are interacting and how people are sort of showing up for the things they need to do in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to throw a rogue question in here. Our friend Curling sent me this text of a picture of Wired magazine, and it says big tech's pledge to Black America. And it wasn't just big tech. Like after 2020, a lot of companies pledged a lot, and it was like generous, hollow, critical, self-serving. So I just want to get your general thoughts like on this idea of all of this money that has been pledged to Black America through a variety of organizations and causes and means. And I feel like it was in the B's, in the billions. And like, yeah. I don't even know if 100 million of it has been realized. It's November of 2021. And I thought we would be creating more momentum, getting farther along than we have, but like, what is this phenomenon? Like, what are your thoughts on this? I want to pick your brain on this.
I think the question goes back to some of the sort of the systems. I actually read an article and they were talking about SoftBank, who had pledged, you know, $100 million to Black businesses. And this is, you know, an organization that has $100 billion sort of dream fund, right? And so it's a small portion. But then when they started talking, they were like, well, the structure of how that other money is set up means that we have to do deals that are massive in scale and size and scope. And there aren't as many individuals who are running businesses, you know, Black businesses that have gotten to that point. I think my question is like, okay, so then, yes, you can take a smaller chunk, but like, what else goes along with that? Mm-hmm. Like, is it $100 million for this and then $100 million for capacity building? Right, or $100 million for these other kinds of things so that you don't have what you've sort of deemed to be this like pipeline problem. Because I think, look, any fund, any money that comes down to entrepreneurs who need it, it can be transformative. And not just in a singular way where we think of the solo or the team of founders, like, oh yeah, they become, you know, wealthy. But like everyone that works there, individuals who are in their extended family, cousins, you know, children, and then other people who know them. And like, there's this massive ripple effect that can happen and occur when people have the opportunity to really, you know, gain wealth and build wealth. But I don't know. I hope that it continues in the direction. I hope that we talk about more systems, infrastructure, building those things so that we don't have, you know, 1-2% of, you know, all of VC and venture capital funding going to Black founders, right? Like, that's not nearly enough for to make the kind of change that they're thinking that the money that they're putting in is going to actually make.
Right. Yeah, I feel like this idea of, oh, there's not the kind of structures and companies and founders that we would be able to give those large sums to, like, really just makes me think about some of the excuses that you hear when you talk about promoting women and people of color in large corporations. Are like, they're not there yet. We can't really promote them. Sorry. And then it kind of just stops there, right? Versus figuring out the what's and the whys of both the system, because things in the system need to change so that they can be there, and then building them up so that they can get those opportunities. Like, oh, she hasn't proven herself in this space. So we can't give her that opportunity. Meanwhile, she'll never get it because she hasn't proven herself in that space. It's this circular thing that never gets the person who needs to make the level up to the next level.
Yeah, there's so much, you know, with that. As you know, I was reading the other day and they were saying that, you know, one of the challenges of when people sort of are, when someone makes that value judgment that there aren't enough people who are at a level to become, you know, a VP, a C-suite executive, whatever, right? Like, the question is, like, how many people did you start with? And a lot of times companies are seeing, it's like, oh, wait, there's a lot of people that enter the workforce and want to do this and that. But like, by the time they would have sort of ascended to that, they're not in the company anymore. They're not in the organization anymore. And then that should be a red flag to companies to say, okay, well, what are we doing that these smart, bright, and talented people, especially for some of those organizations and companies that, you know, are, you know, deem themselves to be sort of the creme de la creme of talent and intelligence. It's like, well, wait a minute, like, you couldn't have even gotten into this company unless they already deemed you as excellent and above all other individuals who could potentially work in this field or this area.
Yeah.
So how did you get off track to then become sort of executive at the level? Like, what does that kind of look like? And I think that's a real challenge that can be basically overcome if people really decide that they want to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it really boils down to. Like, is it important enough from the individuals who are in, you know, decision makers and key places of power? Like, are they interested enough to really sort of put forward whatever you would need to get done to make sure that it is more balanced?
Yeah. And that's one of the kind of classic diversity, equity, inclusion, barriers that as a consultant I come up against when you tell people what they actually need to do to create the change that they say they want. They're like, oh, no, that's too much. Let's just do unconscious bias training and call it a day. That's such a
Yeah.
common, it's like the common thing. But because what this is it's rebuilding a system, and it's also a business problem, the same way that you would approach any business problem. I like to liken these kinds of systemic changes to, like, if you were going to redo your IT system at your company, like, it takes that level of thought, intentionality, collaboration, change management, time, resources, annoyance, all the things, because you're trying to change an undercurrent of a system. And it's not a silo, it's not just one little piece you can sub in and out, but it's how everything works and works together as well. And so you have to mean it and then put the resources in, because it's going to pay off at the end, but people don't see that end game. They're like, well, it's kind of fine the way it is. It's not really that broken. We'll be okay.
Yeah, I think it's and I love the sort of analogy to sort of an IT system, because a lot of times when people talk about with, like, you know, technology infrastructure is risk, right? Like, the risk of if we don't move forward, if we fall behind with technology, if we, you know, are don't have our cybersecurity up to date, like, there's a massive risk. And I think that a lot of folks are missing, like, the risk that you are running is that you literally are moving up against the current, and, like, people aren't interested in, I mean, you see this with a lot of sort of millennials, like, people aren't interested in working for companies where they feel like don't align with their values, right? And so you're running a risk of, if you're continuing to do the same things that people don't feel like aligned with who they are and what they are as a person, that you're gonna have a lot of trouble time, even just from a business case of hiring, of keeping individuals for long periods of time, right? Like, of being thought of as a leader in an industry. Like, there's a whole host of things that come along with that, but I think some companies are starting to kind of have a better understanding of, and then there's also just a risk of missing out on a ton of talent. You know, like, there's, I'm sure there's a lot of individuals, if you take the analogy of sort of Silicon Valley versus, like, you know, traditional sort of Wall Street and how people made money a lot of times before then, there are probably a lot of people who had an opportunity to transition from what was happening before everything got into computers and tech, and they said, it's too big of a risk. I don't really, And now, like, you can't go back, right? And I think that, you know, 2020 for a lot of people is that watershed moment where they're not planning on going back.
Yeah, I mean, the great resignation happening across all these different sectors where people are like, enough, or that doesn't work for me, and I don't want to do it anymore. And having this microscope, being under this microscope over these last, 17, 18 months, like, people started to really look at their lives and what matters and what's important, to your earlier point, and what isn't important. And some of the things people are putting up with them. I mean, even when we think about just the food service industry and the shortage of people there, and this idea, oh, people don't want to work, they're lazy. I'm like, that's so, I can't even say messed up, because no, people aren't lazy. People are trying to create a life they love for their family. They want to keep food on the table, the lights on. People want to work, but enough is enough. Why go back to a terrible place with terrible benefits where you're treated like shit? Of course, you're like, why am I doing this? Let me find something else that doesn't suck.
Yeah, it is a fascinating thing that I don't fully understand why there's a disconnect, and, like, why individuals haven't been able to see that. I mean, I get if, you know, in some cases, if you're a business owner and you say, look, I'm doing the best that I can, and I want to be able to pay people the best that I can, and, like, and I can't find people. It's like, okay, well, I get that, but that is, in a sense, like, the sort of market, right? And if we're going to talk about sort of being in a market and being in an opportunity for people to do things, then that is kind of in essence the cost of doing business, right? The cost of doing business is not just for you to have sort of, in some cases, artificially low labor cost, right? This is what occurs if you decide to sort of go down this pathway. And yeah, I think the service industry is an interesting one because people will always lament that it is a very difficult job to do. But the flip side of that, if you want to make argument that people don't want to work, you're like, oh, well, people just would prefer to sit at home. And yeah, I don't think that's the case at all.
No one wants to lose their home or like their kids' like school money. Like no one wants to be in the situation where like you end up it if you actually literally don't want to work. Like that just doesn't make sense to me. That whole argument makes me really upset, obviously, but it's just like ridiculous.
Yeah, I think, and I think you're just so very right about it's people are thinking about how to, we go back to sort of the idea of design a system, but like design their lives, right? I think San Diego is kind of unique in that because I've often said that like people will lament different things about San Diego. It's like, oh, people do this and that. And like the actual lazy thing comes up a lot when you hear people from the outside sort of, oh, it's a small beach town. Yeah, kind of lazy, laid back kind of thing. But actually, really designing your life in a way where like it works best for you actually requires quite a lot of work. And I think that people sort of miss that part of it. And now what folks are doing is they're like, no, I'm gonna design my life. I want to be able to, drop my kids off and take them to school or be at this practice or in the middle of the day, I'd love to go do X, Y, and Z. Like whatever that is, people are now saying, hey, if I have a do-over and I don't know what's going to happen, then why not, right? Because at the end of the day, if those jobs aren't filled, like, and you didn't like your job, you could always just go back to it later on. Like, there's no,
Yeah. The risk is lower to do that than it is to not figure out what you want and take that shot at designing a life that you at the very least like better, but at the best that you love.
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Alex, I have like one or two more questions for you. This has been fantastic. I know we went way off the rails, but I appreciate your conversation and your insight on all these different things. So, you've been in the space, you've been doing this kind of work. Really, it sounds like your whole career. What would you say is one of the most important things that you've learned in your work, in the activism, in creating these safe spaces for diverse founders? What's one of your most important learnings?
When it really comes down to it, right, that creating a space where people feel comfortable, the bedrock again of that is honesty, right? And I think that that comes from a lot of different kinds of spaces, like I'll be honest, like where I grew up at when I was growing up, probably 90% Black African American, right? So I didn't know a bunch about a lot of different kinds of cultures and different people from other places, right? And so as you grow, as you learn, as you sort of explore, as you go different places, it's a lot of stuff that I still don't know about a lot of different people, a lot of different cultures, right? But if you come at it from the standpoint of like, I'm being honest about this is me, this is what I know, this is what I don't know, I'm not purporting to know specific kinds of things about you and your culture and why something that I might not understand is very, very important to you. Okay, so now let's make sure that I understand why that's important and let's create this environment where we all feel the best that we possibly can about who we are and what we're doing while we're here. And I think that can be sometimes challenging for folks just to be honest and say, hey, this is me, this is who I am. But I try to do that, and that's been the biggest learning because you can't intellectualize it. You can't derive it just from, oh, well, yeah, I saw a documentary on that, or I saw this thing. Like, that's not how it works, right? And people will know honestly when you are BSing them, right? People are very perceptive. It's like either you know or you don't know, and if you don't know, say you don't know, and that's fine. But a lot of times people will try to pretend to purport as if they do know, and that is normally a red flag for most folks, just in general. So
Yeah, it's a wall to that connection. And you know, it's part of the ways that we're socialized, that it's not okay not to know. But it's another, like, one of those just false beliefs, like, of course you don't know everything. Like, no one does. And that's okay. If you're in a new environment with new people, not only will you not know everything, but you're probably going to make some mistakes and some missteps. So how do you own those? And then start to learn and come from this space of curiosity and openness and non-judgment, I think, is the other thing. Because as you're in these spaces, we're comparing, contrasting, trying to make patterns. That's how the mind works. But then there's this other layer that can come in of like, that's right or that's wrong. That's weird. That's like, we don't need, when you feel that, like, cut that off, because there's all of these things happening around us. And your way is not the only way, and your way is not right or wrong. It's just a way. And so is everyone else's. And so how do you navigate these spaces with honesty, with authenticity, and with that openness, so that people's honesty and authenticity can live alongside yours versus, you know, being in competition with it.
Yeah. I think that last one is really great, where it isn't like, you know, there's no competition in like culture or competition in like, oh, who's got the best sort of, you know, way of being in the world. It's just, it's just different. Like, people have different kinds of ways in which they present themselves. But I like the idea of like not thinking about it as like a competition, because I think a lot of times that's what it becomes, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, well, I got to compete to ensure that this is the way. And it's like, well, we don't actually have to do that, right? Like, says who?
Yeah. No, I love it. Alex, this was awesome. Thank you so much for letting me pick your brain and for coming and being on the podcast today. If people want to hear more about your work, follow you, I know you said you're not on social media, but what's a good way for people to, you know, learn more about what you are out there doing in the world? What's a good place for them to find you?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm always excited to, you know, have conversations with people about you know, a wide variety of things, but especially making sure that environments are much more inclusive and that people feel comfortable in them. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.